When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Good morning, Mama. How are you feeling today? Tired from the weight of the house on your shoulders? Me too. Good afternoon, Dada. How are you doing? Worried you're missing out on moments? It's all okay. I want you to know that it's hard at times, but know that you're doing a great job. Your kids feel happy, loved, and I promise there will be sunnier days ahead. We can't juggle it all at the same time or know everything that we're supposed to know. It's just impossible. But what we can do is work together as a community and offer support to each other when it's needed. I want to try and help you however I can. So this year, Happy Mum, Happy Baby are hosting the Big Get Together. It's going to be a weekend of us parents meeting up in real life, yes, actual real life, to share our biggest achievements and laugh at our biggest fails. They're going to be experts sharing little nuggets of knowledge to help lift the load a little, and I would love to see you there. I'll probably be at the bar with a glass of gin. Why not? Tickets are on sale now at happymumhappybaby.com. Bring your partner, bring your parent group, whoever you want, just come and hang out for the weekend. I can't wait to see you there. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. I'm so excited about this week's guest. She is the actress, comedian, author of My Child and Other Mistakes, mother of one. It's Ellie Jane Taylor.
Hi, doll. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. I've actually got to start by saying that I have had some time on my own with a screen and I have absolutely loved Ted Lasso.
I had
just the best experience watching it. What an amazing thing to be a part of.
I know, it's so warm and lovely, and I think it's come at just the right time. So the first series sort of came out in the middle of lockdown, first lockdown.
Right.
And I think it was just, everyone was so miserable and bored and stuck at home. And then along came this sort of, not underground, it was on Apple with, you know, a really amazing cast, but it's sort of a strange concept of a show. This American football coach comes over to coach a British soccer team. Like, yeah, it doesn't sound like anything that's going to blow anyone away. And yet, it's such a beautiful script. It's such a lovely feel-good story that I think it's just really uncynical. And I think it's what everyone sort of needed. It's really sort of hit the zeitgeist at a perfect time. And yes, I feel very, very lucky to be a very small part of it. And it's just one of those sort of things where you go for a million auditions. And this was one audition that I happened to get. And having no idea how big it would be. And in the States, like, it's big in the UK, but in the States, it is massive.
Like, really?
Dude, people dressed up as my character for Halloween. It's mad.
Amazing.
It's absolutely mad. So,
but what I also love is I messaged Hannah about it, and she said the best thing about the whole thing is that everyone who works on it is absolutely dreamy. And that we know that that doesn't happen all the time.
Hannah Waddingham, Emmy Award winner from Ted Lasso. She's one of the most amazing people I've ever met. I've fallen in love with her, and I'm not one of those like lovies who like, oh my God, they're amazing. Hannah is absolutely amazing.
Let's talk about you.
Go on then.
You like this subject, go on.
I'm good at this one, yeah.
You know all the answers. Yeah. What was your childhood like? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Brentwood in Essex.
I'm from Ingatestone.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah,
oh, that's so funny. Yeah, so I'm from Brenny. And yes, grew up here with mum, dad and my elder sister, and had, lovely childhood. Had a lovely childhood, absolutely nothing to complain about. Although I've started going to therapy lately, and my therapist says that everyone says when you ask them about the childhood, they always go, well, yeah, it was absolutely fine, really. Yeah, nothing to complain about. And then she's like, then we unpick it. So that will be exciting when I get down that path.
You're going to find out all the things that your mum and dad did wrong. Yeah. And you thought, no, they did fine.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's lots.
And it's also nice knowing that our kids, when they get to our age, are going to be doing exactly the same, and I'm picking all of our mistakes as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think all the things I'm doing at the moment, I think I'm definitely doing something that's going to mess her up in some way, but which one is it? Who knows?
And did you ever like think of the future and see children in it?
I remember writing in a diary when I was probably in my early teenage years, saying that I thought I'd be married with children at 25. And I definitely wasn't married with children at 25. I did everything reasonably late. So I didn't get married till I was in my early 30s. I had a baby, my first baby, when I was 35. But she's my only baby. I haven't got any other babies. I had my baby.
I literally did just think, my research is completely out of date.
Oh, there's one under the desk. No, she's the only one I have. 35. I definitely did everything later. But yes, so I suppose I thought when I was younger I would have children because that's just sort of what you do.
Yeah.
But then as I got older and sort of thought, oh, you don't actually have to, then yeah. I definitely thought about it. When it became more of a choice as opposed to just, you know, something that was definitely going to happen, then it was a little bit more complicated because I've never been maternal. I was never someone who particularly liked children, liked certainly not babies. So I never had that calling. I never got the cooey, clucky time, never got that. So, you know, and I was 34 when I felt pregnant and never... I still hadn't got it, but I made a very sort of practical decision that in very, very bleak terms, I thought, I can't imagine having died, never being a mother. So that's how I had a kid.
I guess it's those things that take us there. Like, what is it that eventually makes us go, actually, no.
Yeah.
And yours is just wanting someone to look after you when you're old.
Basically, yeah. No, I think it's like imagining what... Okay, so I can't imagine having a baby now. That would be really annoying. But then what, in 20 years, I want... a house and I want people in it and I want a family. So how do you get from A to B? Oh, there's the annoying having the baby bit in the middle. So it was that sort of decision. And I think a lot of women go through that. I think not, you know, there's a lot, definitely some women who are absolutely born to be mums and they know they want to do that. But I think there's also more sort of women who are a bit more on the fence and it's a definite decision. It's an intellectual choice sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think, going into it when you're not maternal is a little bit scary because you think, how on earth is this going to turn out?
And also, you say you're not maternal. There's a great piece in the book where you talk about your sister giving birth to your nephew and you meeting the nephew. And also, I think it's the younger child thing as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You were the baby of the family.
I was the baby. I was the show off. I was used to all the attention. So, yeah, when my sister had my nephew, I sort of turned up to the hospital and I'd bought these lovely cakes, like to say congratulations. And I was so proud because I was working at a good job. But it was, you know, I was starting out, I was early 20s, I had no money. So I spent a lot of money on these very fancy cupcakes. And I turned up to the hospital and was genuinely annoyed when I left that no one mentioned the cupcakes and everyone just looked at the baby. And it was kind of like, oh God, this is what it's going to be like now that another human can like better me because I'm used to the one getting all the attention. And I was so not interested in my nephew and then subsequently my niece when she came along. I remember my sister would get so upset with me because she would say, all my friends, they want to look after their nieces and nephews. And she'd ask me to babysit and I'd be like, oh God, oh God, I've got to spend a whole Saturday night with a baby. And I didn't want to. And I felt it was a real chore. And now I realise what an absolute cow I was. I had no concept. And I think I like to think I'm empathetic, but I think in certain ways I really have to go through something to be able to understand it, which isn't very emotionally intelligent, is it? But it's how my brain is programmed. And I think once I've had a child, it unlocked all this sort of realization about how much of a struggle it can be. Even if you have a charmed life and everything is going well and you are all healthy and you are, you know, have a nice house and all those things, you can still find it hard having a kid. And I think it's only sort of looking back, I realise how much support I could have given my sister. I could have afforded my sister and I didn't because I just didn't get it. And I didn't when my friends had kids until I've had a kid and now I get it and I'm really sorry.
Have you literally been messaging everyone?
I'm so sorry.
I'm really sorry about this.
Yeah, I was absolutely shit. And I feel like at least I realise that now and I can hold my hands up and, you know, also get it when, you know, perhaps friends of mine who haven't had kids when I had a kid made weird choices, and it's not out of malice, it's out of just ignorance, with that, to take the sting out of the word, just, you know, pure naivety, I think.
Yeah. Well, talking about work, though, was work something that you factored in when you were going to, you know, start trying for a baby?
Yeah, yeah. It was really, it always felt like it was the wrong time. And you always think, I'll just wait a bit, just, oh, maybe not now. And then I remember when I fell pregnant and I worked out the timings and I was going to be due just in the middle of a series that I was filming. And I thought that was, I honestly thought that was the end of the world. It was my biggest concern. I didn't know how on earth I would be able to do it and would they get rid of me? And in the end, they were lovely and I just pre-recorded some stuff and it was fine.
So did you get it all done before they arrived?
Yeah, I get it. I got it. So I had a planned cesarean, so I knew when the baby was going to be. So I got, I was lucky nothing happened earlier, but I didn't really even think about that as an option, naively. But yeah, I think I finished work a couple of weeks before and I pre-recorded everything that I needed to before. And then they sort of just slotted that in as and when. Because it was like a topical thing that I was doing. So that was quite odd. Because I remember, like, we'd been home about 2 days from hospital and my husband was on the telly. He sent me a photo. He was on the sofa with holding the baby in front of the telly and I was on the telly, like, really fully pregnant. But I was also upstairs, probably crying probably by myself in the dark. Yes, it was a funny old time. But, yeah, work is definitely, you think having a baby younger, could that have been easier because you wouldn't have so much going on, but then now it feels like there's more to lose. I don't think there's ever an easy time to have a kid, is there?
Is branding a part of it as well in a strange way? Like being a stand-up comedian and the things that you would talk about and stuff, did you feel like, not that you would, but there's an expectation on comedians to kind of, it does life change when you become a mum, essentially, in a world that isn't, more women are entering it and it's absolutely phenomenal and amazing, but in a world, I guess, that hasn't always favoured women.
Well, certainly like gigging comedians, you know, if you're on maternity, there's no maternity pay, but obviously for freelance comics. I definitely felt, I was concerned when I had the child that I was so consumed by her and by being a mum now that I didn't quite know what to talk about. It was really hard and I felt very sort of stuck there for a while. And I think I think I've probably still, to a certain extent, have been aware that I've talked about having a child a lot. I've written a book about having a child and I go from one to the other. I'm like, well, no, you're allowed to because that is your existence.
Isn't that part of being a stand-up comedian though? You're drawing on your own experiences and finding the laughs within that.
But I suppose you don't want to get pigeonholed for it, like the mum comedian. But then also I know that my stand-up has always been incredibly self-obsessed. It's always been I don't do politics and stuff, I do what's going on in my life because it's all about me. So it was about, you know, when I was dating my boyfriend, wanting him to propose to me, it was about getting proposed, it was about getting married, it was about being in a long distance relationship, it was about all the things that were going on. So inevitably, yes, my last show was all about having a child.
It's funny because you must also appreciate now how important it is finding the humour in all of that chaos that is being a mum, especially in the newborn phases.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it can really help when you can be able to laugh at yourself, laugh at the ridiculous situations. I mean, if you don't laugh, you will cry.
And that is the beauty of it. I can remember in a baby club, I think my first child was probably about 8 weeks old, and we were talking about sleep, how much sleep we'd had. And this one mum had said that she'd had 40 minutes sleep that night. And she came out with this laugh, and I have never heard a laugh like it. It was a cross between it actually being the funniest thing in the world, but then hysteria.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that is motherhood. Yeah. That's how you get through it, because if you don't laugh, you will absolutely cry.
Slightly.
It's a manic.
Maniacal. Exactly that. I remember, going to a baby shower before I'd had a kid, and my friend was there. She has twins. They were probably about a year old at the time. And I was saying, how do you do it? And she said, and I remember it was very silent, and she just said to all of us, I don't think I've slept for a year. And she 100% meant it, and then could not, and then she just went hysterically. She couldn't stop laughing because it was so bleak but so true. She kind of heard what she'd said. Yeah. I mean, to multiple parents, holy crap.
Yeah.
Amazing. Unimaginable. Yeah. Christ.
How did you feel when you found out you were pregnant?
I couldn't believe it, really. I was so even though we'd been very much trying and I've been using...
And you really were using loads of apps and peeing on loads of sticks and doing all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't do... I go hard or go home. And if I can throw money at the problem, I will do. So I threw money at a fertility tracking little box thing. What was it? Monitor.
I hadn't even heard of one of these things until
I've
read about it in the book.
Oh, I've looked at it all. I've listened to it all. it's basically a pee on stick thing, but sort of with a tiny computer or something. Right. I don't even know what it does. But anyway, yes, I peed on a stick, whacked it in the machine, and it told me I was pregnant. And I had we'd only tried for a couple of months, and I didn't feel pregnant in any way. The only reason I took a test was I was meant to be going out to record a podcast, actually, that night in a pub, and I fancied a vodka. And I thought, just to be sure. I was like delighted, and then also like, oh, I fancied a vodka. That's annoying. And then also like, what? It was all these sort of strange things going on at the same time. Really, really excited. And then it's the most exciting time. It's the most exciting time, and you're terrified and elated, and you can't believe it, because something, you know, if you want to get pregnant, it's sort of like first kid. It feels like something that it happens in a film, doesn't it? You get a pregnancy test and it's positive, and that happens on the telly, not actually to you in your bathroom. So,
and that feeling actually that you get when that happens, there's nothing quite like it.
No.
The nerves, the excitement. It's a very, for me, it's always been a really weird feeling.
Yeah, it's magical. And you're not pregnant and suddenly you pee on a stick and you are. And the whole sort of future, like it's like another road suddenly clicks onto your life. And you look down, you immediately, and you're going, oh, what am I going to call it? And you're like, oh, it's only about, you know, the size of a full stop at the moment. And you sort of spiral into the future. And then you also have to try and bring yourself back, because you're like, you know, it's very early, what's going to happen? But yes, I remember it being a really, really exciting time. And we didn't tell anyone till I was about, I think about 8 weeks or something. I think I told my mum, maybe 10 weeks I told my mum, and I hadn't told anyone before that. So that was all... it's just mega exciting.
It feels like such a long time. Like if you do decide to wait to tell people, it feels like forever that you're keeping this secret.
Yeah. And I just remember going into like meetings and people would be talking about things. And I'd be like, guys, I'm fucking pregnant. You don't know, you fucking idiots. Like the most, I'm like, oh my God, you don't even know. Like it was so stupid. But it's just like this massive, and you've in your head, I just remember like being in meetings and the whole time just be like, I'm pregnant. And you just can't.
Well, especially if you've got people planning future things, future events, future trips, whatever it is. And you're going, but I'm going to be this amount pregnant, or I'm going to have a newborn.
Yeah. It was wild times, but really magic. I loved being pregnant, and I found it the most, I think it's the most special time. Yeah, it was wicked. It was all lovely. I loved it.
One thing you really, really, really wanted was a girl.
Oh my God, so hard. I wanted a girl. I can't even explain how much. It was like petulant Veruca Salt in Willy Wonka. I want a girl. And I was so determined I wanted a girl. In my head, I was like, well, I'm obviously going to get a boy because I'm being such a brat about it. So we went for a Harmony test, which is where they do a blood test quite early to check for some genetic markers. But also you find out the gender really early. So I found out, I think she maybe was about, it was about 8 weeks.
Right.
Maybe I'm lying, 10 weeks, can't remember, but early. Found out that sort of the little sonographer lady like moved her finger, was covering up on a bit of paper and moved her finger, and I could see it said F for female. And I was like, get it! Like some kind of England yob. She was a bit affronted. She's like, bloody hell, people don't usually quite so enthusiastic about it. But I was, I was really, really pleased. And I think I'm basically extremely unimaginative. So I am a sister. Me and my sister. My mum's very important in my life. I love women. I'm a girl's girl. Don't really like, I like my husband and my dad. I don't really have many male friends, you know. I know women. I love women. I like women. Wanted a little woman. And I got one, thank God, because otherwise that poor little boy. And obviously that's bullshit, because if I had a boy, it would have been lovely. And I would have probably got even more material out of it. So in a way, my loss.
But it's a real thing, isn't it? I think gender disappointment amongst parents, and then the guilt that can come with that. You know, I think I think when I was expecting my third, because I've got all boys, I'm surrounded by Willy. Because I think when I was saying that I didn't care either way, there were lots of people that were saying, actually, I did, and that's something that I've actually experience and then had to work through the guilt of that or the disappointment of that. So I think it's such a complex situation for people that are literally like, I want this. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, it's really hard. And there are loads of like forums on it online. So if anyone does feel a little bit of guilt that, you know, they have partly they're like, oh, I wish I had a boy or I wish I had a girl.
Yeah.
It's very, I think you're absolutely not alone.
Well, I had this strange thing. So the midwife who delivered my first child came in to see me in my second birth. And I was in the pool, I was zoning everything out. But the amazing midwife was there just to say hello, basically, while I was contracting. And she said to me, she'll be here soon. And I was like, oh my God, I'm having a girl. She said, I'm having a girl. So for the next half an hour or whatever of labour, I was like, I'm having a girl. She knows, she's a midwife, she knows. But it was just obviously something that she said that she didn't mean anything by, because then there was this, like, so in my, I guess actually it makes me realise that I wouldn't be upset having a girl because there was this feeling of, oh my gosh, I'm having a girl.
Yeah.
But then when Buddy arrived and he was a boy, I was like, oh my gosh, it's a boy. Ah. Like, I don't feel like it, to me, it didn't matter either way. But yeah, there was a weird moment where I thought I was maybe having the opposite. I also know people who found out their gender, decorated whole rooms, and then a different gender arrived.
Yeah. That would be, yeah, that would be, I can't even imagine. Yeah, that would send your mind.
Can you imagine after all of that if you had a boy?
I'd write so many letters of complaint. I cannot explain.
How did you feel coming towards the end of your pregnancy?
I wonder if it's, in hindsight I say this, but I think I felt good. I'd had really quite, as they go, pretty easy pregnancy, you know. I didn't have morning sickness. I felt nauseous for a bit of the first trimester, but, you know, eat a few mini cheddars, I was fine. I felt very lucky about that. I got some backache and I had to carry a pillow around me like an old lady. And I got a pubis symphysis, whatever, where your pelvic girdle pain, basically. That was quite annoying. But again, nothing. As soon as I stopped exercising, it was fine. Oh, boo-hoo, I can't go to see my PT anymore. Nightmare. So yeah, I felt good at the end of pregnancy. Because I was planned C-section, it wasn't like I had the, oh, when's it going to come and all of that. So I knew exactly, and I really liked being able to plan all that.
But
so,
how did that feel then, the last kind of week or few days or even the night before?
That was
the end of just you being a couple.
That was pretty full. I remember going like, I'm quite, I don't know if you would have like sort of got this from me, but I'm quite melodramatic. I don't know if you've picked that up on
No.
I am maybe a week before, I just remember like taking myself for a walk around our park, local park, by myself, and it was sort of sunset and I was listening to, I love musical theatre, so I was listening to some like really dramatic, like sort of soppy songs, and I remember having a little cry because I thought, this is the last time that I'll do this by myself. And obviously you do go for a walk by yourself again, but you know, like before I'm a mum, and there was a lot of lasts. I think I became a bit dramatic about that, and sort of these solemn farewells to all silly things. And the night before, I remember my husband took a day off work. We went to the cinema, watched an awful Eddie Redmayne film. I fell asleep. And then we came home and I cried. And I remember crying, eating a takeaway Nando's and like crying into my pita bread, because it just was like, oh my God, this is so massive. Like, it's so rare in life that you have an evening before something that is so life-changing. And I think I'd been pretty chilled about the birth and stuff, but at that point I thought, God, what if something happens to me? I'm having this massive operation, what if something happens? And I hadn't really let myself go down that path, which is unlike me, because I'm a very negative person, but I just hadn't even gone there. And I was just scared and vulnerable. And then I had a cuddle and it was fine. And I had a glass of wine. My consultant, when I got my elective cesarean, when I went to see her to get it all booked in, she was like, make sure the night before you have a lovely big dinner and a glass of wine. And I was like, well, that is prescribed wine. It's even more delicious. So I had that and then went to bed and then woke up. I set my alarm. I had to be in hospital for 7, set my alarm for 5 a.m. So I had time to curl my hair.
Oh my gosh, you have literally, did you have the first photo that looks like you've just stepped out of a film?
I look fantastic, mate. Oh,
yeah.
I look great. I've got makeup on. The nurse, when we got into the hospital, the midwife was like, have you got any makeup on? I was like, nope. Like, lied to my teeth. I was like, yes, I know the anaesthetist needs to see if my skin's going blue, but also I want to look good in the photos. So a little bit of bronzer is staying on. But that, I think that sort of suggests how naive I was, really, to get up early to like as if within.
Or nervous. Maybe. Like that feeling of wanting to do something.
I wanted
know?
To look good when I met her for the first time. So silly. And then, of course, sort of that was the last time I looked anywhere near human for a while. And after that, it all went downhill, really. The birth itself was lovely. So I had a planned cesarean, so it was all very calm. And I always would say how the operating theatre was so joyful. It was... And I think the theatre staff, it must be a nice operation for them to do. You know, they know, you know, all being well, it's going to be a lovely, happy ending. It's a lovely experience. And they, you know, we put music on and they were dancing to it and singing. It was, and I always say she was lifted into joy. Honestly, it was just the most beautiful experience. I'm so glad. I'm so glad I had it that way. Apart from when I was on the table, like being sort of catheterized, one of the theatre staff said to me, "Oh, I liked your set on Live at the Apollo," which is a little affronting.
You kind of don't want to be recognised in that moment. Yeah.
And then the anaesthetist was like, "Obviously, everything that happens in hospital is completely confidential. Like, don't worry, we won't tell anyone how wonky your bikini line shaving is. You're okay." And then went into recovery and everything was lovely and I was off my tits on drugs. And then when it came to standing up for the first time, I think I've never known pain like it. And that was really when I was like, hello, motherhood. Nice to meet you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I think when it comes to C-sections, I don't think it's talked about enough what that recovery is like. I think C-sections have a bad rep and actually it's a massive procedure to go through. And then the recovery of that
is
huge.
It's really
My sister stayed with me actually after she had my niece. And even her laugh had to change because she couldn't laugh. It became this weird...
laughing, coughing. Oh, the worst. I think, again, I did lots of research and I read a lot of forums where women were like, yeah, you know, that recovery was bad, but it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I was just unlucky. I've got a low pain threshold, but I personally found the recovery really tricky and very different. Like I know, for example, my sister, for example, had a cesarean for her second child, was up and around walking with ease, really, within, you know, 12 hours. I did not find that. I found it extremely painful. I would say agony, the closest. I've screaming with pain, trying to stand up. And my husband was, he said, listening to me, it was like hearing someone in like a torture facility in Guantanamo or something. He was like, it was piercing. And I think what really got me, and I write about this in the book, is the fact that I was discharged with no extra pain relief, just paracetamol and ibuprofen, which I thought was normal because why would I know any different? And the doctor was like, yeah, we don't usually... we try not to prescribe anything stronger when women leave because it can cross into the breast milk. And I thought, oh God, well, nothing can go in my precious breast milk. I can't possibly put that into my child because that's what, you know, a doctor had told me. And then I was in so much pain. And then I subsequently spoke to my friend who's a GP and she was like, ring your GP, get them to give you this particular drug. It was like a stronger ibuprofen. It doesn't cross into your breast milk. And it just really annoyed me that this male doctor had chucked me out with major abdominal surgery. And I think we say that phrase, major abdominal surgery, but major abdominals have been cut open, all bits and bobs have been flipped open, there's all this internal healing. You're sliced in the middle, a fundamental bit of you where when you laugh, when you breathe, when you cough, when you stand, anything you do, that movement really flipping hurts. And just sort of dismissed as, yes, well, it's, you know, the baby is the only important thing now. Anything that could vaguely go near the baby, the mother is just chucked under the bus, which I think is such bullshit because there are two people involved in childbirth. And the baby, yes, of course, they're very important, but also the mother is. And if the mother is not in pain, she's going to be able to be a better mother to that baby. And I will always be extremely resentful that I was sort of just shoved out the door. I just think it's a real example of women's pain not being taken seriously. And yes, I'm very, very cross about that. And I sort of say to anyone who has a serum, make sure they give you good drugs if you need it afterwards. Make sure.
Also, it's such a shock, the whole thing, that I think you are literally just... For me, I was like a little bit of a mess during that phase.
Absolutely.
Like anyone could say anything to you and you're like, yep. You know, it's just such a whirlwind of a time.
For sure, exactly. So you're just so vulnerable and you need to be looked after. And I think, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of medical policy, but I just think, yes, of course, it makes sense that you can get something a little bit stronger than, you know, Nurofen you'd buy from the Esso when you're hungover.
Exactly. Yeah, you've been through enough, I think, to get a little bit extra.
Yeah.
What was it like leaving the hospital? Because obviously you're in immense pain still by that point as well.
Yeah, immense pain. Realised that, you know, I took with me to the labour ward, hair drying, straighteners, new outfit. Like, what was I? I was so naive to it. Of course, I didn't go anywhere near that. I couldn't put on the new outfit. I had to put my coat over my nightie. I just couldn't, you know, I was in agony.
Couldn't bear the idea of getting changed.
No, couldn't, absolutely not. And then went home and mum and dad picked us up from the hospital. Remember every speed bump, like, oh, fuck. And then mum and dad came in, put the baby down in the car seat and left us. And I remember being like, oh, fucking hell, what on earth do we do now? And then... it was November and night came quickly, which did not help with my mental state. Those winter babies, man, are hard. And yeah, that first wild night in my bedroom with the child next to me, my husband asleep, and I just was like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like she cried, so I'd be like, feed it. And luckily the feeding happened pretty well. So yeah. Feeding, that's good. I've changed it. Okay, now it's still crying. Oh, I don't know. What do you do now? And then I got up and was like, in agony, I don't want to wake my husband up. I'll walk round the house. So holding this tiny little creature with this, you know, massive wound on me, just wandering around the house. In hindsight, I basically got up and walked around my house because I thought that's what you would do if you're in a film with a new baby.
I've seen this somewhere.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
What do? You go and sit and then Something Sad by Adele plays or something in the background?
So that's about right.
Yeah. So I did that. And I remember ending up lying on the living room floor with her. And I was like, this is awful. And so continued the first few awful months for me, just where I just found it so overwhelming and profound. And I suddenly didn't know who I was. I didn't know up from down. My life had imploded and I thought we'd ruined everything. Because at that point, I couldn't see that this bit, the newborn bit, was not forever. Of course it was. Yeah. Of course it was. How could I not see that? But at the time, well, this was it. This like little grenade had gone off and we'd ruined everything and I will never do this again and it's horrific and what have we done? I can't explain how out of sorts I was. And yeah,
it was... The great thing as well, when you talk about this in the book, you've almost got like a caveat before you even start, before you go into it, to say this... It's a phase,
it's
it moves,
a phase.
But
yeah.
It's very much real, I think, when you are in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, and I say, I do a chapter on the newborn life and I say all the horrible feelings and the physical pain, like the mental pain, everything passed, everything. And at the time, I couldn't see that it ever would. And I think it's tricky, isn't it, with pregnant women, there's the argument for don't scare them, which I absolutely understand. But then also I'm like, well, don't scare them, but also let them know that it might be really shit and they might hate the experience. Doesn't mean they don't love the baby. You can love your baby, like your baby, perhaps at the beginning. I think I liked mine for a while before I loved her. But you can, you know, you can look after a baby competently, but also fucking hate the experience and think you've ruined your life. That's okay. And that's you're not a bad mum. It doesn't reflect on you badly as a parent. It doesn't mean that you don't love your child. It doesn't mean you aren't grateful, which I think is a real issue. It does not mean you are not grateful to be able to have a child in the first place. I wish I'd known more, but then I wonder, could I have known more? Can you ever really know until you've done it?
I think it's amazing how, I think having your words out there, you know, you can't underestimate how much that helps people that can't maybe formulate the words to express how they're feeling. So when they read an account that's kind of like, that those are the words that I couldn't say.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. Because I think I didn't have the words at the time. I certainly didn't. So to be able to, like I said, have the honour of being able to write down that stuff for other women to point to go, it's not just me. And I think also perhaps it's nice to have someone who isn't a doctor going, these are the symptoms of postnatal depression. It's just a woman, a normal woman who had a really shit time.
Yep.
And is fine now. Like, that's what I say about my book. It's not like, it's really boring in a way. It's a story of an ordinary woman who had an ordinary baby. There's nothing that's going to blow your mind. But it's, I think that's the thing. It's this sort of dichotomy of this very run-of-the-mill experience. Everyone shoots out a baby. Who cares? Bothered, boring. But, you know, while it is sort of that, to each individual family, it's life-changing and seismic and bigger than the moon. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to balance those things up. It's extraordinary and ordinary. And it's your experience, and hopefully, yeah, it's our experience.
One thing you have now, which I absolutely love, is an inability to walk past a mum with a baby. And not, you can't walk past and not say anything.
I can't. And I never used to give a shit about newborns. I never could give a monkey. Do you want to hold the baby? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But now when I see a new mum and a new baby, I think, I wonder if I'm, am I cooey about baby? I think, or I'm sort of cooey about the mum, because, you know, for a mum to be out with a newborn, you can sort of imagine, if you go back, I can imagine what it's taken for her to get there. I have a go-to chat-up line, which was, that one looks fresh. It's a great
That's
opener.
That's what I say.
Yes, Jade! It's such a good opener,
isn't
it? And
then I say, well done for getting out.
Yes, you look great. Even if they look like shit, you look great. Well done. Oh, when, how old? Oh, my God, when mine was 2 weeks, I was still crying in the shower. All of that. Just build them up and say you're amazing and just listen to them. Say, I usually go, how was last night, rather than how is, just, you know, for specifics, because I think people are more likely to be honest rather than a general question. And then just always like, it will get better. And I remember when I was in when I'd had my baby was about 4 or 5 months old, when I was like, I really knew newborn mum still, and I doled out my lactation consultant's number. Like, I was chatting women up and passing mobile numbers, because it was just like, I need to help you so much, because it probably make me feel better. But yes, I adore new mums. I think I don't know, I just have a new appreciation that I never ever had before.
And when your baby was younger and you did start going back to work, how did that feel? Because obviously you've gone through this massive transition, your life has completely changed, and then you're put back into your, you know, your previous setting, if you like. How was that?
Well, it's weird because our jobs are, it's not like I went back 9 to 5.
No,
I had not that much maternity proper leave, really. I had about 3 months properly off, and then I started doing bits and bobs, but that was, you know, one day here, one day there. It wasn't full time. It felt really hard. I stupidly agreed when I was about 8.5 months pregnant, I agreed to put a tour on sale, stand-up tour on sale. So I had, so this tour was on sale, tickets were being sold, and I had to write this show. I had to write it. So that was really dumb, and I shouldn't have put myself under that pressure.
And did you feel creative in those early days of motherhood?
Oh, I had so many ideas. Yes, no, I felt...
Was your brain mush?
My brain was mush. I felt like I was just the physical incarnation of human mundanity. I had no ideas. All I could think about was the child. So a lot of it was about my baby. It was a stupid amount of pressure for someone who, you know, I felt unfunny on like an elemental level to try my bloody stand-up show. So that was stupid. But then there were days where I did things like, you know, I think my first proper full day back at the office, I say in inverted commas, was doing the Crystal Maze. The Crystal Maze with Gemma Collins and Arj.
Right.
Carol Vorderman.
Nice.
So that was hilarious. I mean, that was hilarious. What a stupid, like, I think my baby was like 3 or 4 months old, and I had to go to Bristol. And it was like so exciting. I got to go on the train. I remember like breast pumping on the train, and then got to wear a jumpsuit, and then got to push Gemma Collins through a pipe in the industrial zone. That was quite exciting. And then like, I was so desperate to get back for the last feed that I ran, like I went home in the jumpsuit. I didn't even have time to change. I went home in my Crystal Maze jumpsuit, breast pumped on the train home in my jumpsuit. Very good access. Who knew?
Nice.
And then, yeah, jumped up, like went, ran upstairs, and then got home by 10 o'clock to feed her. But it was... What a wild day.
And do you feel then that time, because obviously we're in a really lovely position where we love what we do for work, do you feel like actually stepping out, that was part of finding you again, a you that existed pre-mum, but obviously has been altered, because I think motherhood affects every single part of you, but certainly having a bit of time that is yours to be you.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I think it really helped me find my brain again to just give me a sense that, I wasn't just a mum. There's nothing wrong with being a mum, but that's not there. I am many things, and mum is one of them. And now I think I've got to the point where I can combine the two, and I enjoyed writing my book so much. Mm. And, I don't know if I would have written a book if I hadn't had a child. And she's given me so much in every sense. She's good material. I'm going to be really gross and corny, but she's opened my heart. Like, I feel much more, more emotional, more empathetic. She's made me a nicer person, 100%. 100%. And I never understood how, when people would say that, because I don't believe that, having a baby is the most selfless, like, you're so selfish if you don't have children. That's absolute bullshit. I think having a child is one of the most selfish things you can do.
I love me so much, I'm going to make a little half me to look after. Like, it's arguably incredibly selfish. So I don't think it's made me less selfish as such, but I do think it's made me a nicer person, because I just understand what other families might be going through. Yeah.
So do you feel like you're enjoying motherhood more and more as your daughter gets older?
Yeah, I do. Some people love the newborn. They like little babies. That's not my bag at all. I like toddlers. I like her saying funny things. I like being playful. I'm a big fan of being silly. My stand-up is very silly. And she is, she's a toddler, so of course she's silly, and she says ridiculous things, and she likes funny faces, and they're just wallies, aren't they? And I love, all I need to do to her is run around the room a bit and go, I'm going crazy. And then she's like, but she thinks, oh my God, mummy's the most exciting person in the world. Like, she's a great audience, and I love making her laugh. My mum's always like, you entertain that child all the time. It's like, she basically gets dinner and a show every night. But maybe that's one of the things that I'm going to mess her up with, because the want for them to be happy and to smile. Yeah. And you can't, that's too much to put on another human. They have to be happy. She's allowed not to be happy and smiley, but I really try.
I love that. If you could write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to, and what would it say?
I think, I was thinking about this question, and I think essentially my book is the letter that I wanted to write myself. And it's a whole bloody book, because I do like to whine on. Just to be able to say to me, whatever your expectations of being a mum are, it's not like that. And it's going to be awful, and you're going to be darker than you've ever been. But you will find so much sunshine in a way that you could never foresee before. And you'll actually really like being a mum. And it turns out you are actually quite maternal. That's hopefully what the book is to myself and to other mums, just to say it's going to be okay. And to just get, like we said, reflect back your experiences.
Yeah. Well, that I finished it and I absolutely wept. I just absolutely adored it.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I'm really, really pleased.
It's so good. And I would now like you to finish three sentences for me. The first one is, being a mum means?
Being a mum means exquisite vulnerability in the most wonderful ways and terrifying ways, but just, it's just so profound. Since having children, I cannot believe I spent so much of my life without a child, and I didn't appreciate the freedom. And I know everyone says that, but really, just, you could do what you want. And you could go to Paris for the weekend. I didn't, but I could have.
It's those little things, isn't it? I think that's what makes motherhood or parenthood so overwhelming. The idea of, you literally can't just walk out of your house without massive thought.
Yeah. Just what I would give for a week back in my 20-something life.
Differently you'd live that week.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder, knowing now, God, yeah, that could be dangerous. that could be dangerous. But wow, what? I mean, I had a lovely 20s, but you just go, it would be better. Knowing now, it'd be even sweeter, wouldn't it? Crikey.
I feel like there's something in that. There's a great film in that or something. It's kind of like there's definitely going to be some people that just go back and they just sleep the whole week, like it's just a break. And then there's going to be other people that go back and they literally just don't sleep the entire time and just, yeah, totally rave it up.
Oh,
and just
my God.
Take and do everything that they possibly can.
Oh, heaven.
And finally, I'm happy when...
Oh, I'm happy when, I just get a lovely, like a proper big, lovely cuddle. And she says something like, "Mummy, I like you." I get that a lot lately. I like you. Like she hasn't upgraded me to love, but I'm on the way. Just when she's next to me cuddling, or I have a little hand in my hand, or you know, just even going out for a baby chino to the Sainsbury's cafe can be just a lovely little joy.
Yeah, I love that. My three-year-old at the moment finds it really funny if he says, "I don't love you, mummy. I don't love you so much." Okay. But then he gives it with a little cheeky grin and I'm like, "I'm taking it because you know exactly what you're doing."
That's clever.
Yeah.
Clever boy. Watch out for that one.
I know. Ellie, thank you so much. It's been so delightful to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. I'm so delighted. This was one of the first podcasts. I think it's probably the first podcast I listened to when I found out I was pregnant, because I was like, I need to jump into this world. And I think it's such a wonderful resource and I'm absolutely thrilled to be on here.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much. And paperback's out 10th of March.
It certainly is, yep. And yeah, it's in hardback and on Audible and everything, but around.
And did you record yourself for the audio version?
Yes, I did the Audible, yes.
Amazing. Yes. I love that.
2 days.
I love it when people read their own things when it's non-fiction. Oh, yeah.
Apart from the sound engineer who was recording it was this young sort of 20-something-year-old guy, and he had to keep pronouncing, like helping me pronounce words correctly. Turns out I've been saying, he had to like say, it's labia, not labia. I was like, are you literally mansplaining female genitalia to me, 20-year-old man? He was right, though, annoyingly, poor guy. And it was his job. So there we go.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Ellie, thank you so much.
Thanks, doll.
Speak to you soon. Bye.